So first of all, removing hatred. What Bodhidharma means by this is removing not just hatred, but any kind of aversion and ill will. He means removing any resentment and any tendency to blame others for our misfortune. He means as well putting up with the difficulties, the pains that life brings, responding to them with equanimity and patience. He means as well putting up with the difficulties, the pains that spiritual practice brings, and the spiritual practice which you're not just leading for yourself, but you're leading for the benefit of others. Spiritual life is a struggle. It can be very difficult and demanding. It takes you into places where difficult things come up. A few people have said to me when I've asked them how they are, they said, things are coming up, things are coming up, and it's a little bit uncomfortable, obviously. And it's easy when things come up. It's easy, very tempting to give in to resentment, to give in to blame. Blaming other people, you know, the person next to you in meditation who's shuffling around. Actually, it's our mind that we're having trouble with. It's not whether or not they shuffle. Blaming our teachers, you know, bad teacher, bad practice. You know, if I'd only been given, you know, that special teaching by so-and-so, I wouldn't be in the mess that I'm in. Blame our friends, blame our families. If only they hadn't done that, I would be fine. Now, Bodhidharma takes a classic traditional approach to this problem of aversion. He says that throughout innumerable lives, we have continually turned away from what is essential. We have left the root and just followed the branches. We've left the main river and we've just got caught in the little meandering tributaries of life. We've just flowed because we've abandoned the root of things. We've just flowed into various states of suffering, the six realms. We're kind of distorted. Because we've constantly given in to attachment and aversion, because we've not been true to the real, we suffer because of this. That's why we suffer. And the only way to cure this is through, first of all, being patient, enduring whatever pain arises, not retaliating, not reacting. And one of the signs, it said, of real spiritual progress, of real spiritual vision, is this patient endurance, remaining calm and unmoved in the face of suffering, not seeking to hurt others because of one's difficulties. Put more positively, this first of the four practices is the practice, of course, of the first great Buddhist precept, the fundamental Buddhist precept, abstaining from harming living beings, abstaining from any form of violence, and more positively still, it's the practice of love, the practice of deeds of loving kindness, the practice of friendliness. So why is this so fundamental, so basic? Well, we have to remember how Bodhidharma described liju, or entering by communion with primordial reality. He described that in terms of having a deep faith, which means a kind of glimpse of the true nature, the Buddha nature, which is the same in all sentient beings. He discovers through this that there is no self and no other, which means not that things vanish, but he means that you can't separate self and other, and that the ordinary and the sacred are one, meaning that you don't sort of retreat in some sort of spiritual, pseudo-spiritual state, separate from other people. If you harm others, if you blame others, if you resent others, you're quite simply out of touch, badly out of touch, with the true nature of things. Renouncing harm, becoming genuinely friendly to others, loving others, opening to others, especially empathizing with others, identifying with others, recognizing that they're alive like you, that they breathe like you, feel like you, think like you, imagine like you. When you begin to harmonize with others in this way, you're actually harmonizing with the way things are. This is why I personally regard the Metta Bhavana as not only an elementary practice, which is the way it's often spoken about, but as an enlightenment practice. It's an enlightenment practice. In that practice, you're softening self and other. You're dissolving self and other. I firmly believe that if I really made progress with the metta bhavana, I would need no other practice. And of course, this isn't just in relation to other people, other human beings, and it's related to all life, whatsoever, even inanimate things, so-called inanimate things. Dogen, when he speaks of this, evokes this, he uses the term intimacy. And I find this really very, very beautiful and very profound, the way Dogen discusses intimacy. It's incredible. Non-duality, after all, transcending self and other, subject and object, is a bit weird. It's a bit cold, those expressions. But intimacy puts it so well. I spoke of the Buddha holding up the golden flower to Mahakashyapa. And Dogen describes this, the Buddha's act of holding the golden flower to Mahakashyapa, as intimate language. Intimate language. It's intimate gesture, of course. Intimate communication. Intimate language. And Dogen says, intimate means close and inseparable. There is no gap. Intimacy means, he says, the Buddhas embrace everything. You embrace everything. And I embrace everything. Practice includes all. A generation includes all. And intimacy includes all. You should clearly study this. Indeed, intimacy comes forth at the place where the person is, at the moment when understanding takes place. Right now is the very moment when you are intimate with yourself, intimate with others. You are intimate with Buddhas and intimate with other beings. This being so, intimacy renews intimacy. Because the teaching of practice enlightenment is the way of Buddhas, it is intimacy that penetrates Buddhas. Thus, intimacy penetrates intimacy. I mean, you could probably spend the rest of your life just contemplating that passage. Incredible. Incredible. So remove hatred, practice patience, soften. Unfold loving kindness, become intimate with Buddhas and all beings and all things. And you can see, I think, with insights like this, why you get such wonderful Chinese and Japanese Zen poetry and painting, why it's a practice, because in the poetry, in the painting, and the calligraphy, there is this expression of that profound intimacy with all things and all beings.